Hey guys, welcome to the HYM podcast, the podcast talking about all aspects of motorsport, from four wheels to two wheels and everything in between. I'm your host, Nick Yellerly, BMW factory driver, and I'm joined by my fellow Brummie and host, Jake Hughes, Rocket Venturi Formula E reserve driver, and also producer Alex Murley, ex-World Supersport rider. How are we doing, boys?
Pretty good.
All good, yeah. Looking forward to today's episode. We are basically, undoubtedly, the world's best go-kart driver ever to live. He's also competed in Formula Renault, Formula 3, and won a championship in Formula Renault along the way as well, before now being a factory driver for McLaren in GT World of GT Racing. So to here to talk about that, and just generally chat a load of rubbish with us lot, it's Mr. Ben Barnico. How you doing, mate?
All good, thanks boys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, looking forward to it. Nice little intro from yourself there, Jake. Made me sound half decent.
It's true though, isn't it?
Maybe not best go-karter in the world, but I've won a race called Kartmasters a couple of times, so that apparently gives me a bit of credit.
How many times is that now? We're trying to figure it out. Is it nine or something?
Yeah, nine. No,
only nine. You're going for 10 or what?
I was quite content with nine in all honesty, because I kind of achieved the record, done what I wanted to do, and then everyone's like, oh, you need to go for double figures. So I think I'm going to leave
even
it
after, and yeah.
I'm just going to leave it for a couple of years and then see if I've still got it with old age. And
old age.
I've got a good excuse to get out then if I have a couple of years off if I don't win it as well.
Is it Simo, the one below you, Mark Simpson?
E7, yeah. Yeah.
E7, so I was joined. Yeah.
The last time I did the event was 2019, and I was joined with him on 7. So I entered in two classes because I'd done it before where I won two in one day, but the theory behind it was more that it doubles my odds of getting the record, and then I won them both and it gave me a bit of a break. So yeah, it was good.
I don't think anyone's ever catching you. No.
Well, he probably thought that, so you know, you gotta just nice have it while it lasts. I think it'll help now as well, like obviously all the boys are going in single seaters so early that yeah, that should give me a bit of cover.
Yeah. So kind of like bringing it back into karting sort of the beginning, how did you kind of get into karting?
So I was lucky that my parents have got a little bit of land at the back of our house, nothing major, just like 3 acres. And to be honest, I had like a little quad and a little grass buggy, and I just used to love razzing that around the field, you know, kind of a bit of a petrol head from a young age. And then went on holiday to Cornwall and just had to go on a rental car. And, you know, I already, like I say, enjoyed driving stuff. Had to go on this rental car. I was like, wow, love that. Kind of came home, looked it up on the internet, and off we went. Rest is history. Went to PFI, which, funnily enough, my dad now runs and owns. Bought my first kart from there. And, yeah, just whatever happened.
And when did you start? Like, what age did you start?
So I was eight and a half. My first proper year of karting was 9 years old. So I did August 2005, did like my arts test, first few clubbies. Then 2006 was my first proper season of doing a championship and stuff like that.
So that's funny because I'm obviously older than you. I'm 30 and we started in the same year. I didn't race in karting. Yeah. I started end of 2005.
Jake was probably with his GCSEs or something as well at that time.
I don't know. I was doing IB, mate. I was a step above A level.
Racing wasn't even on the radar for you.
No, it weren't. I remember coming into it. I started in Easy Kart. But I remember coming into Super One in 2011, and like at that point, you were properly. I think you were doing KF3. Top kart or something.
Yeah, that was it. That was my first year racing steps driver. So I was going against for the title against George and Callum O'Keefe won it that year. So yeah, that was that was a good year. I won my second GP that year as well.
Already at that age, I hadn't even started racing at 15 or 16, and you've won two GPs at that age.
I just remember coming into the paddock, and you kind of had like this. You kind of had this fan base, like in the grandstand at
Barney
the Barney Army. Yeah.
Represent.
Got it now. Still got it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I had more fans then than I did now, in all honesty.
It's because you're winning.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. I can't talk, can I?
So, with the karting though, you've raised some big names. Or you came up with the era when you were, you know, racing with Verstappen and Leclerc and George, obviously. Was Albon around that at that point as well?
Yeah, so, you know, you kind of, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because wherever you are, you always feel like when you're in there and racing it, you're against like some of the best people it has been for a while. But yeah, luckily enough, from the age of 12 to 15, like, you know, my kind of prime karting career, raced in the UK to start with before I took on international competition, was going against Alburn. You know, he'd already done a year in juniors before me. And when I came in, you know, it was right on the top of his game, sort of dominated it. He was an exceptional karter. Me and George literally started at the exact same time. We got our first karts pretty much the same time, and we was batting around PF on our novice plates together. You know, near enough did my whole career with him until, you know, I went to GTs, and I think he did all right. Can't remember what he's up to now.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, so you know, those two, especially on UK competition, along with a lot of other good guys that just never got their break. And then, yeah, when I went into international competition, was teammates with Leclerc for 2 years. You know, got a really good relationship with him. And the year I became European champion was going head to head with Max, and had a few hairy moments with him.
Yeah, going all that sure.
You beat him to the European Championship, didn't you?
Yeah, well, so it was me and him going into the final round, and we actually had a crash, and he appealed it and lost the appeal. So he raced under appeal because he pretty much put me on my head. And then, he got disqualified after the event, so I ended up winning it. But had he not have raced under appeal, he wouldn't have won it anyway, kind of thing. So, that's
deserved title then, that one.
Yeah, it's kind of it. Would have been nice. Oh yeah, that was, you know, that was the highlight of my karting career, really, to win that European champion. It was my first year in seniors as well. Won the British that year also. So yeah, that was probably my best year. 2012.
Yeah. 2012.
Yeah. That, yeah. Seems,
God,
seems
like still in karting.
2011 as well. You picked up McLaren, didn't you?
Yeah. The so that's it. So at the end of 2010. So that year. Was my second year of juniors, just moved to Mick Barrett Racing, who were the team at the time that just literally won everything the year before with Albon. You know, my dad kind of, you know, Barretts have always renowned for being one of the best, if not the best team in the karting paddock, but you know, they do kind of charge pretty highly for their services. So, you know, my dad really gave me everything that he had, emptied the bank, and put me there for a year, and it really paid off. I had a great season, went head to head with Dennis for the title, who was, you know, heavily funded by the Racing Steps. And I think going against someone like Jake with such a difference in budget kind of just opened a few eyes. And yeah, I was lucky enough to be picked up by the McLaren F1 Young Driver Program and the Racing Steps Foundation all at the end of 2010. So that sort of where my career took off, really, at the end of that season.
Yeah, I mean, having an opportunity like that at such a young age, obviously you've got to produce the results in karting like you did do. But then do you think fast track you into your career? Obviously, Formula One's the main game or main aim, and you want to, you know, be racing against the people that you've been racing against. You've name dropped Leclerc and Verstappen and whatever, but they got to F1 for whatever reason. And what people don't see or don't realise is, actually, there's so many people that maybe could have had they had the right break.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, look, I have no doubt about it that had it not been for the Racing Steps Foundation and McLaren, I would never in a million years have made it as a racing driver. I would have simply been a professional karter. I would have been driving for the PFI karting team. That was, to be honest, that was already my plan during 2010. My dad, like I said to you, you know, my dad gave it his all to kind of give me my one chance, and that year was literally it. The plan was already in place for me to join the PFI team for 2011 as their like junior driver and race for them. And he would have put me into Europe, but you know, it would have been nowhere near on the scale that Racing Steps gave me an opportunity. And yeah, on the back of that, I might have got a cheap deal for Formula Renault for 1 year or something, but that would have been it. You know, I'm very realistic that had it not been for those, you know, that big support, I wouldn't have made it. And yeah, you know, yeah, they all made it to Formula One, and they're classed as the current greats of Formula One. But when you put it in realistic terms, considering where I come from, to be, you know, be able to call myself a professional racing driver now and race all around the world, you know, like just come back from Asian Le Mans, times like this where it's so difficult just for normal people to leave the house, be able to travel to Dubai and Abu Dhabi and race and still be able to do what I love and, you know, get paid for it. It's just amazing, really. So just got to be grateful for where you get to. And I'm sure it's the same for you boys. You know, I've name dropped a few people, but I'm fully aware that Jake was in Formula Renault at the same time as me and raced against the same people. And you've raced against even, you know, more mature names. So, you know, I think we all probably have the same, you know, we're all three of us good lads. You know, I'm sure we have the same thought on it.
Well, I think we always go into it, where maybe not on the first level in karting, but definitely from your sort of end of your karting career to first year of karts, you've kind of got Formula One in mind, haven't you? Most of us have. It's like, it's just natural, especially if you're given the chance, either a family sponsor, in your case, Racing Steps and McLaren, that's the goal. But I think, like you say, when you put some context to it from where, you know, yourself, speaking about myself and Nick as well, where we all came from, it's to be able to race and earn money and race around the world. It's like, I think, I don't want to say you would have snapped someone's hand off if they offered you that when you were still in karting, but you probably would have.
Yeah. It's a tough one to answer, in all honesty. I was actually having this conversation with someone yesterday that 2014 and 15. In 2015, the only reason I knew about sports car racing is because my driver coach, former Matt Howson, was driving in LMP2 with KCMG. But other than that, I literally had no idea about the world of sports cars and GTs. And it was only sort of at the end of 2016, when the Racing Steps said they were coming to an end, that I even sort of discovered the world of GT3, and that's the same year I did my first Blancpain race. You know, the goal for me was very much to, well, you know, I said that, I'd always said that I wanted to be a Formula One driver, but like you said, Jake, if they said, look, you know, you're not going to make it, but we can still make you a professional driver, of course you would have taken it, because at the end of the day, it's still got four wheels and engine. Yeah. Everyone's going to try and win it as well. And the buzz from winning, I'm sure, you know, it's not Monaco or whatever, but you still, when you win and you beat everyone else and you've done the best job you can, it's still just as good as a feeling inside.
Yeah. And I think that the opportunity, obviously, that RSF and McLaren gave you to even go into karts, like you won a championship. I think it was the year when we raced together as well.
Yeah.
And then won races in F3 as well. And I wonder if they didn't give you that option, if you look at it from point of view, if they didn't give you that opportunity just to win those races and that championship, you wouldn't have been able to walk straight into a factory seat, so to speak, with McLaren.
Yeah, of course not. You know, I was very, all those opportunities to win those races wouldn't have been there without support of the Racing Steps Foundation, especially. And yeah, of course, I wouldn't have been able to walk into a factory seat. Doesn't matter how good enough you are. If you haven't got a good reputation to go with it, you're never going to be able to sort of do anything, you know. So yeah, you're exactly right.
Nice. And just for the viewers, Ben, could we just explain what the Racing Steps Foundation was? Because it folded a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So, you know, it was set up by a man called Graham Sharp, who, you know, was a successful businessman. And he, you know, had just, you know, amazing of him, really. He sort of was passionate about racing. And he basically wanted to give young British drivers who had the talent and the ability to be able to, you know, become a professional driver or potentially be a Formula One driver, but they didn't have the family funds behind them in order to do so. So they picked up quite a few of us, Jack Harvey, Oliver Turvey, Oliver Rowland, Jake Dennis. You know, I'm sure there's a couple that I missed there, but
Collado, right?
Yeah, Collado. Yeah. And, you know, it picked us all up and all gave us our chance. And yeah, it was, you know, I'd only sort of done 3 years in single seaters at the time when it finished. So I kind of felt like, you know, I hadn't had my true opportunity of single seaters compared to some of the others. But nevertheless, you know, it's kind of, it goes back to the old saying, don't be sad it's over, be grateful it happened, because, you know, I wouldn't have been able to open any of those doors without it.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't think British racing probably, I don't want to say we took it for granted at the time. But when you look back now, because obviously it's been a few years since it ended, there's not been anything, I don't know about it beforehand, but there was definitely not been anything like it since.
It was special,
really.
Yeah, it was extremely special. And to be one of the people to have been part of that program, you know, like, I mean, like, look at yourselves, you both probably tick the boxes to be a part of it, you know, British, good drivers. You know, some of it was luck being picked up by them, being in the right place, right time. Like I said, going against Jake for that British title back in 2010 for sure put me in a big spotlight for it. And yeah, I owe my entire career to them, really.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because actually, I had some conversations with Derek, who ran it at the time.
Yeah, that's it.
Because I'd just come in to cut. Yeah, he managed the program. And I came in. I was a bit too old, actually. It's basically why I didn't ever get a shootout or anything like that when we had the conversations. And I would say I was under the radar. I never had that big karting background, which, if you look at every other driver that Racing Steps have picked up, they tend to try and find you guys in karting and then bring you up through and make the transition with you with cars. And then if you look at all, actually every single name I think that was on that program is now a pro driver in some capacity, whether it be Jack Harvey in IndyCar, James doing obviously a bit of Formula E with Ferrari, you've got Ollie Turvey in Formula E, Jake Dennis with in Formula E, you, McLaren Factory, you know, you've got everyone has made a pro career. So they definitely didn't do a bad job at all in putting you in the right situations to at least be able to say, I know you come from Chesterfield, it's not, you know, it's not Monaco, you don't have this massive, you know, funding behind you.
Monaco of the
to
North.
Be able to, exactly, Monaco of the North. And you don't have these hundreds of thousands behind you. So for them to be able to pick these British, well, both drivers and, as we'll talk about in a minute, Alex, some motorbike riders as well and some good ones, they've helped now be able to earn, you know, sums of money that you'll never have dreamt of or being able to say if you went to just stay in karting and be the next sort of Mark Litchfield or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. You hit the nail on the head, and I have no doubt that that's exactly where I would have been and I would have been doing had it not been for it.
Oh, sure. Was it John McPhee, Alex?
Yeah, John McPhee was the big name who came out of the Racing Steps side of the motorbike side of it.
John's doing Moto 3, isn't he? Successfully. Yeah, yeah. There's also the young British guy. What's his name? Rory
Skinner. So
yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So John's. I think he's staying in Moto 3 again this year with the Petronas SRT team. So that's the team of Fabio Quartararo. Yeah. From last season, so you know, effectively he's teammates with Rossi this year, John. And then also we've got Rory Skinner, who's in BSB this year. You know, he had a very successful campaign in British Supersport last year, you know, won loads of races on the trot and absolutely fantastic, and now he stepped up into the BSB class with the Thatcher Kawasaki team. So you know, yeah, it's produced some really good names and really strong riders. Another mention to that is a lad called Dan Jones, who was involved in the final year of the Racing Steps program. You know, made brilliant progress. And now he's back in British Supersport as well in the GP2 class. So, I mean, on the motorbike side, you know, the same as the car side, I think it did a fantastic job.
Yeah, it seems that way, doesn't it? It really seems that way.
Great names.
It also had the best livery ever seen in motorsport.
It looked cool, actually.
There was a tent in that livery, I'm sorry. Yeah. So, you'd see, I'd see Ben in my mirror, because he would be in my mirror, wouldn't he? And see that red nose, always blue at one point as well, with the yellow helmet. I was like, oh, for God's sake.
Going for a lunge.
Yeah, and was going to that hairpin at Aragon, last corner, and like, oh, yeah, I know he's going
funny,
for it.
Funny you say that, actually. This year, well, I say this year, 2020, when I did a couple of Formula 3 races and stuff with Carlin, was the first time I've ever driven a single seat without that livery. And that was, you know, just little things like that's odd, because I'd always been, you know, always had been representing Racing Steps and things. And you just, you know, it was, like say, such an iconic livery and something that was known to everyone. It did look good. It was, I mean, it wasn't everyone's cup of tea. It was a little bit different, but, you know, like, I was just loved it, grateful of it.
I think it was good. And how about your two guys' time then in Formula Renault? Obviously, you raced together a fair bit. How was the relationship then? Obviously, you're still mates now, so it can't have been too bad. But was there any good races, good lunges going on, or what?
I don't think we ever had any two sort of close battles, did we? It's probably why we're still here talking.
I think. Yeah. I was just going to say that.
Yeah, Ben was too far off the road.
No, I mean, in 2014, you had Ben and Seb were like, and Louis Delatraz fighting for the championship, I think, and I was at the back somewhere. seems like with the wrong team looking back, maybe. But then 2015, we were both in really good teams, and we were getting race wins all through the year with Jack again as well. I really enjoyed Formula Renault. The World Series was great as well.
Yeah, I love the championship, to be honest. Those were, you know, my Formula 3 career following that wasn't you know, I had a few wins, but it wasn't exceptional as a whole campaign. But Formula Renault won the NEC Championship in my first year. Like I said, that was probably the first time I actually raced against Jake, because we had different karting backgrounds. But yeah, my first year, Renault was with Fortec, who'd won it for the last 2 years on the trot. So going into probably the best team that was on the grid. There's a little bit of pressure on, because obviously Dennis won it in his first year as a Racing Steps driver. And although Racing Steps was very good in the way that it wasn't cutthroat like a Red Bull junior program, they always just, as long as you were learning and progressing and doing a good job, they're always happy with you. But personally, you'd always put the pressure on to make sure you did a good job and made sure your place there was well secure. So yeah, just as the year went on, I only won two races actually, but just sort of chipped away at it. Was very sort of steady and consistent, and ended up winning the title. And then the following year, 2015 in Eurocup, kind of became a bit more aggressive, and a couple of times that bit me. Otherwise, I think probably would have had a shot at the title. But yeah, those were great days, and car that just suited my style, and I was always very quick in.
Yeah, with that car, you only drove the paddle shifts, right?
Well, I started, the first car driven was the former Renault, what used to be the UK bar car with the sequential.
Yes. Sequential bar. Yeah.
That's
the better car.
How to drive a car. Oh, yeah.
You had to blip it.
Yeah, you had to blip it. My first day at Anglesey, that'll be a long, lifelong memory driving around there in that. Did about four planks where I kept on sliding off at the first corner on the bottom of the car. So, it's a fun memory, wasn't it?
No, I mean, so I did the same, similar thing with my first test was Pembrey with High Tech. And it was always trying to blip the throttle at the right time with the downshift. And, you know, when you hit it wrong and it just surges forwards and it's like, that noise, like, oh, no, I've done it again.
Then you have a lockup as well. You're like, oh, my God.
Oh, no, I've done it wrong.
My first ever racing cars was with that Bark Renault. Really? But it was in, you know, the V2V series. No, you know, the V2V series in France. So it was at Le Mans on the Bugatti circuit. My first ever race. And it was absolutely torrential. And I remember sitting there, going, I am well out of my depth here. Like, this is my first race. I've done one test day in a car, and I'm driving at Le Mans. Like, how does that work?
That's a weird story. Yeah, and most people just, you know, do your standard Pembrey test and whatever, and then you do your Silverstone National Day with all the other, you know, road cars on it, and then build up. So it's a bit different to the standard run of the mill thing, isn't it?
Yeah. But then after that, you went into F3, didn't you, George? As your teammate.
Yeah, so I did the 2 years of Renault, and I went into Formula 3, which was, that was all interesting, because obviously came off a good Formula Renault campaign, tested with Prema, all went good, signed for Prema, kicked out of Prema, signed for High Tech. You know, that kind of all messed me up a bit, because I missed all the winter testing. I only ended up doing like 4 days in total, but still kind of came out the blocks pretty good. The start of this 2016 year, I was up against George as my teammate, and you know, at the time was fiercely competitive. We were both two of the best British drivers coming up, and you know, beat me by a tenth or two, and you'd be like, that's not good enough, want to accept it. And then you kind of look back now and you're like, probably was all right, should have been a bit happier with that.
It's funny how different people develop.
How did that Prema thing fall through?
To be honest,
not talk about it.
I never got told a definite answer at the time. At the time, it was kind of like, you know, it is what it is. We're just going to move on and make the best of a situation that we're in. And a couple of years later, it was, you know, rumoured that it was because Racing Steps wouldn't agree for me to finish second to Stroll. That was the deal. That was his year to win the title. Everyone who was in the team, that was their agreement, supposedly. You know, don't hold me to this. Don't want anyone to take any legal action against me. But and Steps obviously felt that I was good enough to potentially have a crack at the title as I was going into the best team, and didn't really want to forfeit my chances of that. So, I mean, now you look back and you'd have gone, yeah, too right, we'll finish second.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah, win it next year.
Yeah.
No, that's cool.
How was it with George? As your teammate?
Well, it was, me and George had quite a funny relationship, to be fair, because like I said, we started out in karting at the exact same time, and we, you know, we were going to the same races on our novice plates at the same time. We literally did it all together. So, you know, as kids from the age of probably 8 to 10, we were like best of friends. I remember going to his house, staying there. I remember actually when I was probably like 9 years old, he used to live King's Lynn. I was walking around Marks and Spencer's. His mum bought me a smoothie. I just dropped it and smashed it all over the floor of this Marks and Spencer. Just well embarrassed. But, you know, like, that's what we were like. And then Kartmasters 2010 in WTP Cadet, I was winning the race. On the last lap, he smashed me off. And then that was it. We were literally severe enemies from 10 to 15, like, hated each other's guts. And then when we moved into cars, obviously matured, and that got kind of forgotten about, and we became friends. And then one of the years when we all did the McLaren Autosport Award together, can't remember if you were in it that year or not, Jake, 2014.
I think I was in it the year after. I was in 2013 and 15.
Yeah, so 2014, we did it all together, and we became quite good friends again. So going into Formula 3 with George, he was obviously in his second year. He'd already done a year with Carlin. So it's good benchmark for me that, you know, knew he was one of the top drivers, and he was coming in with experience, whereas I was coming into it as a rookie. And the start of the year, after the first three rounds, I was actually beating him in the championship. So you're like, wow, here we go. Like, you know, I'm knocking on, like, doing some good things here. And then, you know, there'd be the odd little mistake. Like, I remember Red Bull Ring was really quick in qualifying, ran wide on a corner and damaged the front wing. So then he beat me that weekend. So, you know, but I was there or thereabouts. But then my Formula 3 career sort of took a bit of a turn. We did a race at Norris Ring. All three of the high-tech cars were struggling like mad. I tried to overtake a guy in a race. He tried doing me back at the next corner, ended up in a big crash, destroyed the car. And then my season was never really the same from there. Just struggled to get speed out of it. And that was kind of the end of my single-seater career, really. That and the racing steps came to an end at the same time. Yeah. So it was all kind of, you know, it was a bit disappointing the way it ended after my single-seater career, having such good momentum for the first, you know, say 90% of it. It was only the last five rounds of FIF3 where I really struggled. And, you know, it was, and in some ways that made it even nicer when I came back in 2020 and did the little bits, because it was kind of like, oh, I'm not that bad at this. That was kind of, as the team were telling me back at the end of 2016 when I was not doing very good.
Yeah. Let me guess, was Ollie giving you some?
Well, it was just, you know, like, yeah, there's him and driver coach and the chief engineer all saying, you know, you're doing this wrong, you're not doing a good enough job. And it was fun when I was at I did Mugello in Euroformula this year, and the driver coach from the team was actually at Mugello driver coaching another driver. I was in the queue for the rental car with him, and he was like, oh, are you looking forward to getting back in the car? And I'm like, well, you know, try and do my best. Obviously, last time you were with me in one of these Formula 3 cars wasn't very good, so see how I get on, really. And I managed to win the race, so yeah, that's a bit of a middle finger to him.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be that.
And then that was the transitional year, wasn't it? Because, like you say, RSF kind of finished, and I guess that kind of put you out of single seats because of financial reasons. And then GT came about,
yeah. So, the end of 2016, obviously, the logical thing for me to do would have been another year in Formula 3. I had shown a lot of promise in 2016, especially in the early half, like I said, and a second year with another good team, I'm sure would have been able to fight for the title. But racing steps come to an end. It was clear that I really pushed very hard to try and go down the Indy Lights route with the racing steps at the end of. I was like, yeah, I agree, it's coming to an end and blah, 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 but can you please just kind of give me this one last chance to have a shot in single seaters. I understand Formula One's an unachievable goal at this point with only 1 year left of your funding. But, you know, Jack had just come off the back of 2 years in Indy Lights with the Racing Steps Foundation support, and I pushed hard for it, but they weren't prepared to do that for me. You know, it was like, we're done, is what it is. And the opportunity came for me to do one race in WRT at Nürburgring. Me and Jake, Dennis, both went for they'd been in contact with Racing Steps. Said they needed a driver for the final race. Would any of our guys be interested in doing it? So me and Jake went for kind of a shootout test at Barcelona. At the time, they had no idea it was a shootout. They just said, look, we're evaluating drivers for the following season. We'd like you both to come and test. So we went there, and luckily I beat him by like a tenth or whatever. So that night I got a phone call, oh, can you come and drive at Nürburgring this weekend? And Jake was fuming. He was so pissed off. He's like, oh, you shouldn't have hit that curb or whatever. So that was it. Did my first race. And actually at that race, saw the guys from McLaren GT. And when you do the McLaren BLDC award, you know, you're part of the evaluation. You had to drive the McLaren GT. And he he said to me, "Oh, yeah, is this a route that you're looking to do, coming to GTs?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, the racing steps is coming to an end, so it's most likely where I'm going to end up." Did a good job with WRT that weekend, following it, all kind of, the racing steps were still managing me, you know, because I had a contract for the whole year, and then that was it. Deal was done very shortly after for me to go to GTs with them in 2017, and here I am now, five years later, still doing it.
I do remember in that, it was 2015, wasn't it? The Autosport Awards.
Yeah.
McLaren Autosport BRDC Awards, to quote its name properly. You were very quick in the GT car. I do remember that.
Yeah, just...
because we all talk, know, don't we?
Yeah, no, we all do talk. You know, you did a really good job in the F2, but then, you know, DTM and GT3, I can't remember the exact, but yeah, you know, the GT did an exceptional job. And I was kind of, literally on the day, Andrew Caldy said to me, "Oh, well, you know, you did a mega job there. If you ever want to come to GTs, let me know." And then sort of a year down the line, there I was on the Nürburgring on the grid. And he's like, "What are you doing here?" And I'm like, "There we go." Like,
yeah.
So it all just kind of, it just shows, you know, that McLaren Autosport Award at the time, when they say to you, when you don't win it, they're like, "Oh, you know, it's still an amazing opportunity for yourself." And you think, "Yeah, right, whatever. I've just lost it. I'm not too bothered." But, you know, for me, it's probably opened a massive door for my career. And gave me the foot in the door.
Yeah, it's perfect. From single seaters to GTs, obviously, Jake's in the midst of possibly trying to do that route. I did that route, but I went to Carrera Cup because I had no funding like yourself. It all went, and luckily I got picked up by a cup team, and without them, I wouldn't be a professional racing driver, that's for sure. So it's where you fall. But how have you found it? I mean, for me personally, from my experience, I really prefer the style of racing. I actually really enjoy being a teammate with someone, and some of the races you get to do are just awesome. So how have you found it?
Yeah, in complete agreement on that. You know, I know you've done a couple of, you know, you've done like the Nürburgring 24, which I'm yet to experience, but just, you know, the highlight of it for me has to be doing the Bathurst 12 hours, you know, like gone all that way to Australia, a country which some normal people only wish of going and visiting. And then you're there, you're doing the job you love on one of the most famous circuits in the world. You know, and this in 2020 managed to get second there, was a bit unlucky not to win it, but you know, just, that's just one example, but you're just like, wow, what an amazing opportunity I've been given, and I'm there doing the thing that I love. Like you say, the racing side of it, you know, at the end of the day, we all do racing because we love the buzz of being in a competitive environment, trying to beat our competitors. You know, in GTs, you're just doing that, but for a longer period of time, you know, like a 12-hour race or 3 hours, 6 hours, 24, whatever. You're just doing what you love, but for a longer period of time. And like you said, having a teammate in the car, you know, sometimes you do get a teammate who's not your cup of tea, and that takes a bit of the enjoyment away from it. Like, don't get me wrong, and I have had one or two of them in my time, but there's enough. If you have a good couple of guys sat next to you in the car, who you genuinely see as your friends, and they're both quick, it's just an awesome working environment. You all push each other, and you get, it's just amazing feeling, you know, like one that it's hard to describe, to be honest.
Yeah, until you've actually done it, I think people that come from the single seater of chasing F1, they don't quite understand how much fun it is. And I'd, like you say, I've really enjoyed that. We've raced a little bit, actually not on track, but we've been on the same track at the same time, whether I've been in a pro-am or you have. But
yeah,
hopefully we get to hack a little bit more later, because again, it almost reminds me a bit more of karting, whereas unlike single seaters where you can't really follow and get in the mix so much, you can really get close and pressurize someone. And it's like a massive, the longer races, particularly even if it's only 6 hours, it's like a chess game. And you're trying to figure out, oh, which driver is in the car now? Is it, say, Ben? Or I know you shared the car with, like, Lewis Williamson, who I've raced against as well before. And it's like, oh, who is it? What are their driving styles like? Where are their weaknesses? And it's like a big chess game for, it could be up to 24 hours. And you just, yeah, also the level of competition, because say you look down the grid and you've got all these guys that, in my opinion, could have, if you put them in a Formula One car, they'd have been completely fine, you know, not a problem. They'd have been, you know, competitive. They may not have been the Verstappen or the Hamilton. Yeah, sure. There's not many of those. But if you look at like the top 20, 30 in, whether it be GT Masters or whatever, blank, well, GT World Challenge Europe now, Intercontinental GT, they're all guys that were top level and all getting paid. So I would say the depth of field is just wild. It's actually really quite cool when you look down the list.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. You know, the first year I jumped in it, you know, first 2017, I'll never forget, you kind of come off the back of single seaters and you think that's like, yeah, you know, we're the Winterboys, you get in and there's all these people that you haven't heard about, but they were just in the exact same position as me, but 7, 8, 9 years ago, where they were good enough to make Formula One and didn't. Yeah. My first year of GTs, I was teammates with Alvaro Parente for pretty much all of it. You know, he was...
He's quick.
Yeah, proper GT2 fast. GT2 race winner. You know, and I just didn't have a clue who he was. I was like, yeah, they call me quick and he's the boy. And that's why they put me with him in the car with him, because they thought, you know, I was of the same kind of calibre as him. But I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll be quicker than this guy. And like, fuck, you know, Jesus is like right on the top of his game. And yeah, you just don't, you have no idea about how hard and how competitive it is. And yeah, there's literally 40, I think probably 40 drivers on the car, because there's always 20 pro cars, which if they have the right BOP, the right setup, they're capable of winning. And as you said, if you put them in a Formula One car, I'm sure, well, some of them now seem to be coming more just from genuine GTs. But the guys who jumped over, there's loads of them that would have been good enough to make it in F1.
Funny you say that with the story, because I was obviously teammates with Richie Stanaway, who made the jump from GP3 when we did it in 2015 over to Aston. And I can remember texting him at the time, and he's like, oh, yeah, I just did this test. And I turned up, and this old dude absolutely hammered me by 4 tenths. And I was like, oh, what's his name? He's like, Darren Turner. I was like, you have no idea, do you? He's like, one of everything. And Darren's obviously been there and thought, oh, yeah, this quick little...
Darren was my first ever manager.
Really?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
He's a proper driver as well. He actually only, the end of last year, I got called up to do that Sebring race, lastminute.com. And he was there, and man, he was all over me. He got by actually and did one. So it shows also your GT career can be, I think he's 42 now. I don't want to do him an injustice, but he's just in his 40s and he's still rapid.
Yeah, but he's like a brand ambassador as well. That's the other important side of it. Yeah. I guess people don't understand as well. Like brands like Aston, McLaren, the German ones as well, Merck, Porsche, BMW, Audi, they like loyalty, don't they? They like you to be professional. They don't want this kid who's just obsessed with himself.
Yeah, that's massive. Yeah, it's a massive part of it. You got to tick a lot of boxes, and they expect you to be everything to the brand and give them the world and see it as the world. So it's there's a long list of things that you need to fulfill.
Yeah, where do you reckon your future's going to be? Like, obviously, not so much this year, because I think we pretty much say that you're probably going to be in the realms of GT racing with McLaren, but like, where would you like to be in like 5 years' time? But obviously, there's talk about Alan BH coming along. And we spoke about that with a few of the other guests we've had on. But that looks quite exciting. I mean, I was watching Daytona 24 just a few weeks ago, and it's like the top four with 10 minutes to go were within 5 or 6 seconds of each other. And it just looks mega. And I'm really looking forward to it. So is that something you're looking at?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one because, you know, I'm very happy where I am in GTs. You know, I really enjoy the racing. I'm very grateful to be a McLaren factory driver and paid by them to race, but you always want to be at the top of what you're doing. And I've not won a GT World Challenge title or anything like that, but I do probably believe I'm good enough to get in an LMDH car and winning it in the right car with the right teammates. I was lucky enough, you know, 2019 drove in the LMS series and Asian Le Mans in LMP2 with Carlin, which went really well. Was had Tinkle as my teammate, who's regarded as one of the best DPI drivers, you know, and was more than competitive against him. So it's definitely somewhere where I want to be. I feel that I'm in a very good position with McLaren as one of their GT drivers. I'm probably, you know, the only one out of their pool of GT drivers that has the capability to jump in something like that and be on the top level, because, you know, as good as Rob Bell is, he's not driven a prototype. You know, don't get me wrong, he might just jump back in the prototype and be on it straight away, but sure. I'm the one with, you know, the most recent
current experience.
Of something like that. And then Joe Osborne's never driven a single seater or a prototype. So it's kind of definitely something that I'm looking at, and I feel I'm in a good position to hopefully make something work from that. But that'd be great to achieve it, but at the same time, I'm enjoying what I'm doing. So as long as I can keep racing something and then be at a high level, I'll be happy. You know, then you always look at a former E. Take someone like Jake, for example, Dennis, someone that raced against Norm, quite competitive in relative terms, did a few years in GTs and was still able to successfully make that jump into a former E car. It always makes you wonder what if, you know, you just need to be right place, right time, get the right opportunity, and it could all click. So just keep it open.
Wasn't the talk about McLaren, because obviously you're contracted with McLaren and you'd obviously like to stay there, I guess, for the foreseeable. I think I read somewhere that they were looking at both LMDH and Formula E.
Yeah, exactly, which, you know, is good for me. Good that I'm already part of the brand, kind of, I believe, tick the boxes as their brand ambassador side. So, yeah, it would be great to get an opportunity like that. But at the same time, you know, I drive for Customer Racing, which is a separate company to Racing Formula One, which is Zach's side, which Formula E and stuff would fall directly under. So there's always a bit of a question mark. You know, as, I know we're all one company and all one brand, but it is very much we're Customer Racing and that's Formula
One.
It's
different money,
yeah. So that would be the only, say, speed up in the way. But, you know, I have a good relationship with Zach and I'd hope that we could open an opportunity there. And then, you know, it's all down to taking your chances, isn't it? If I get a test or anything like that, you just got to nail it on the day and show that you're good enough to be able to do something like that, because they're never going to employ someone who ticks every other box other than being able to deliver the goods.
Yeah, rock up and do it. I mean, you've got a good shout. If they were to do it, it's all hypothetical. It's the same, I think, with every manufacturer, really, that they have to be looking at it. We've talked about it with a couple. I guess it's a very viable financially thing to be doing, particularly with the launch of GT Pro in IMSA, whether that comes to GTE.
Yeah.
Obviously, that would be good for the likes of all three of us, just because more customers will buy cars and we'll be able to race for them. But with the LMDH thing and McLaren, obviously, Zach has a co-ownership or ownership completely of United, who are already doing LMP2. So they already have the experience and maybe the infrastructure to do an LMDH program through one of his teams with McLaren.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you can't answer any questions on his behalf. And truth be told, I have no idea about what the plan is. But, you know, it's always just trying to make sure you're in the shop window at the right time for these opportunities, which is why, you know, as much as I do enjoy driving GTs and loyal and completely committed to McLaren for the moment, it is good to get the odd opportunity to do a race in a P2 or a little bit of single seaters like I did last year, just to show that you can still do the job in different, you know, it's not like I'm not just limited to GTs. I can jump into other things and still do a good enough job when it's asked of me.
Do you miss it? As in, like, because for me, sometimes I've been not in anything particularly single-seater orientated, apart from a few days in the F1 testing, but that's not race environment. Over a lap, for sure, and I'm happy to admit it, it's more fun when you are going through the corners at, you know, ridiculous speeds. Like turn three flat in a Formula One car is 260 k's an hour, which is just mind-boggling, and they're trying to rip your head off your shoulders. At GTs, it's a different type of enjoyment. So for me, I miss the one lap sending. Exactly. I miss the one lap sending just for that peak performance, but then I prefer the racing in GTs. Was that something that you really felt when you went back from your GTs now current job to, say, single seaters with GP3 with Carlin last year and your P2, that you thought, oh, wouldn't mind a bit of this again?
Yeah. P2 I really enjoyed, because you've got that high downforce, high speed, that buzz of a single seater car over one lap, and then the racing, you know, it's a long endurance race, and you know, it gives you a lot of opportunity on strategy to take your start on the back foot to get it back. So I did really enjoy the P2 stuff. GTs drive over one lap, I still enjoy it. It's just a different challenge, you know, like, yeah, the speeds aren't as high and stuff like that, but you still have to put the car on the limit to get the most out of it, which, you know, at the end of the day is the same as what you kind of do in a single seater. Thing that I miss about single seaters is just someone's having your own car and having.
Hello.
Hi, darling.
Just later, if that's okay, mate. What 30 minutes? Perfect. Spot on, boss.
Thank you.
It's a highly professional production, this, isn't it?
It's because he's got maids in his house, you see, so it's just the cleaners come in.
Yeah.
This ain't no hotel.
We'll leave that in.
So the thing that I do miss about single seaters is that obviously in GTs there's a thing called BOP, balance of performance, so that you know, the championship have the control to turn your car up and down, and sometimes you do just genuinely have a bad BOP and you've got your hands tied behind your back because you can't physically produce a good result, which is a very frustrating thing. And you know, sometimes your teammates want to lead the car in one direction which you don't agree with, whereas in single seater, you know, you had complete and utter control. Sometimes senior engineers and stuff would stop you from doing stuff, but they're the only things that I miss, really. And yeah, you mentioned the Formula 3 stuff I did with Carlin last year, the FIA F3. That was actually, you know, in all honesty, yes, it was great to get the opportunity, and I loved being back in the single seat paddock and in the environment, but driving on those Pirelli tires,
just gonna say,
was required. Like, I did not enjoy that one bit. Like, we get in our GT cars and we're flat out racing proper for 1 hour, and in that thing, like, the management and aspect side of it is, you like, you get maybe 5 flat out laps across a weekend, and I was like, how do they get people to pay like budget to do this? It's just, and then to flip that, I got in the Euro Formula car, which was on a Michelin and an old F3 car, high downforce, blah blah blah, and I really enjoyed it again. You know, I thought, oh, mega, love driving this. But that FIA 3F car with those, I think the car itself is probably quite a good car, but the tire side of it was something that I really wasn't a fan of.
Well, they get people to pay it because they FIA managed to get rid of World Series, which is a competitor, was a competitor to Formula 2, and then Formula 3, the old Formula 3, which was a competitor to GP3. So now people got no choice.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a shame, you know, and I feel, you know, looking back on it, I was lucky to drive the old FIA 3 cars. It was like high downforce, like flat out 35 minutes, giving it everything you got, because that's certainly not what it is now. And, you know, in all respect to the grid of last year, you know, my second race at Silverstone, I was qualified top 10, was fighting in the top 10. I really don't think I would have been able to jump into an old FIA 3 car and do that like 4 or 5 years ago. I think, you know, it just is different now. It is a bit different.
Completely different skill. Yeah, I can see that and agree with that. Some people that are very, say, patient with their throttle application and maybe don't have the capabilities to extract that last couple of tenths, it doesn't matter so much anymore. Whereas when I was doing, say, 3.5 in 2012, if you know, if you'd miss 2 or 3 tenths, instead of being on pole, you can be 12th, 13th or whatever. It was super, super close, and you never had to look after tyres. So it was flat out for the whole period. And that's, yeah, something that I definitely always look for when I'm trying to do a race series. So like GT Masters or DTM, for example, with the new current or the upcoming GT3 rules, I think are 2 championships where you have sprint race formats and you can just drive flat out. And I do, even if it's in a GT car, I really, really enjoy that kind of thing.
Yeah, completely agree. That was the biggest thing for me. I was like, you know, I've not done it in such a long time. And everyone was like, oh, did you enjoy it? I was like,
no.
Yeah, good. But I was like, no. I didn't not enjoy it. I did, you know, I was very, you know, hugely grateful to Trevor for giving, like, trusting me to do it and putting me in the car. Because, you know, I would have thought there was a list of people ahead of me that would have ticked the box, but you know, it was amazing to be there, and I'm glad that I did a good job. But in terms of, you know, you always look back and think, you know, you asked me earlier, do I look back and think, oh, I could have made it to Formula 1 and driving that? I was like, yeah, it's good, but you know, I probably, hand on heart, enjoy what I'm doing now more than that. You know, like say, having a good team of guys around me, driving a car on the limit for an hour long, and yeah, it's just felt it was a better buzz.
No, I completely agree. And with Carlin, Trev is so good with giving opportunities like that. He's done a couple of things where he's put drivers in that he felt that are obviously very, very good, which you are, and just giving them, you know, a little heads up or leg up, sorry. And if you see all the names that he's put in, if we have a chat about Trev in general, I remember I was going to do a DTM test, I think, for BMW 2 or 3 years ago, and I haven't driven anything with any sort of downforce for years. And he said, oh, I've got a Euro F3 car at SNET, come and do the morning. And I was like, you sure? And he, you know, just went over and did that, and just gave you little helping hands all the time. And I'll always remember he's a big part of the single seater fraternity. I'd actually like to see him come over as a team, or Carlin as a team. I know they've gone to do IndyCar, but I'd like to see him come and do some GT stuff. I know they've done the P2, but I feel that they would really be able to maximize packages and be an awesome endurance racing team as well.
Yeah, agreed.
Trevor even, I don't want to say saved my career, but when I look back, it was a big moment, because at the end of 2016, when I was racing GP3 with Dams, I'd basically ran out of money. And he put me in the car for the last race. Ben will remember, he put me in the last race in Hockenheim. And the car was rapid for whatever reason. It was just, they had a terrible year with whoever the drivers were, I can't remember. But the rapid, we qualified second behind Stroll, broke the lap record, got a podium, and did Macau. Best rookie in Macau, and then it was all of a sudden got a driver with Hightech the year after. But yeah, when I look back now, if he hadn't given me that opportunity, I don't know, I'm not sure what I would have done.
No. Yeah, no, he is, and even with me in the P2, you know, I'd never driven a P2, but I was in a situation where I didn't have much racing with McLaren, you know, and I just saw they were doing a P2 team, and I literally just rang him up and said, you know, I'm available. And my only involvement with Carlin before that, you know, I always knew the people through the racing steps, like I knew Treb, knew quite a few of the engineers there, just from when I'd been to like watch Jack Harvey and British F3 and random bits like that. But yeah, I'd done one day in a World Series car with them, which went really well. And off the back of that, when I said I'm available for the P2, I fitted all the boxes. I was British, which way they wanted. I was fairly tall because Jack Manchester was really tall.
And Tinks.
gave me the chance. And yeah, you know, I've got maybe a couple of things on the back of that since.
Yeah, it's good when things like that come across and people don't. I think the listeners may not realise how everything has to fall in place in a perfect way for these opportunities to, you know, then you take advantage of them. So it's pretty interesting. And before we start wrapping up, you've just been out in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, racing that McLaren round and getting some really good results. So how was it? You know, I didn't actually follow, to be honest, the last final result for the championship, but I saw you on your old Instagram poses and putting up those photos on the podium. So it can't have been too bad.
Yeah, no, it was good. We ended the championship in fourth place, which in the GT class in Asian Le Mans, the top four finishers get an entry to Le Mans. So, unfortunately, at the minute, McLaren don't have a GCE car to race at Le Mans. But nevertheless, my job there as a factory driver to go and support the team, to get that entry for Le Mans was a big goal of theirs. So that's a massive tick. You know, that's Nick. You know, a lot of the time, it's not all about the winning. It's about helping the team. Of course, we all want to win, but it's helping them achieve what they want to achieve. And that was the big goal for them to win Le Mans. So go to Le Mans. So that was amazing. Yeah, we had some good results. We had a second place in the first race in Abu Dhabi and a second place in the final race. No, sorry. Second place in the first race in Dubai. Second place in the final race in Abu Dhabi. Between that, we had a couple of bit rocky races. Race two, Dubai, we got sixth. Bit of a bad strategy call. But, you know, at the time, 4-hour race, you're given an opportunity on a full course yellow. And if it worked for us, would have won the race quite easily. But this time it didn't. Still got sixth, pretty good result. And then, unfortunately, the first race in Abu Dhabi, Brendan, the amateur driver in our car, who was an exceptional am, great guy, just literally no fear at all, just loves racing. So it's been a blast working with him. But he had a bit of damage, hit a car on the one of the opening laps, and we ran with damage for the rest of the way, and we only managed to scrape one point. I made the point about BOP earlier. The Porsche was untouchable in Dubai, also very strong in Abu Dhabi. So realistically, to finish top two in the championship was always going to be really tough with that. But, you know, we could have got third. So it's a little bit disappointing not to leave there with third in the championship. But, hey, like I said, we've still got the entry to Le Mans and some great results. And we all had a good time. And doing races like that, you know, I've done already this year five races. Done one 12-hour race and four 4-hour races. It's amazing to get these winter Asian series in GTs, and just gives you a good head start on like, I don't know how long it has been since you've driven, Nick, but certainly someone like Jake won't have driven a real car in like 6 months maybe. So, you know, it's just amazing to be out there racing already.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right. The Asian stuff is always good. I think it was for me with mid-December in Kailami. Time I jumped in a car, so not too long ago. But all I wish I was out doing some of the stuff they sent. I think Nicky Katzberg was out there in the M6.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it was a super, super strong grid in GT. Yeah. You know, like Marcello was there, Katzberg, Pierre Guidi, David Brigon, Maxime Martin. You know, a lot of the brands sent their big guys there. So it's a bronze, silver, gold format in terms of driver lineup. So, you know, I'd always be against those names, and qualifying we'd always struggle a bit. We lack a little bit of front downforce on the McLaren, so it's hard to get everything out of the new tyres. But race pace was always very strong, and yeah, had some good battles, and really enjoyed my time there. So yeah, it was great.
It is mega, isn't it, out there? And I saw. So are you telling me that you were teammates with? So for people who don't know, I think you were teammates with Ollie Milroy, right?
Yeah, Ollie Milroy. Who
he's a silver.
Yeah, he's the silver. No. Because, yeah, but you know, you look at him and we all know he's a good driver.
Yeah. Hasn't been
Hasn't been so active. No, not for no fault of his own. As we were saying earlier, it's all about budget and opportunity. And for the last few years, he's been working in, as a, one of the head coaches in the McLaren Pure Series, which is a GT4 championship just for the McLaren 570S. And also the road car events where, you know, owners of McLaren and potential owners of McLaren come and drive your 720 road cars, 765s, blah, blah, blah. The list goes on. And that's how we met Brendan on one of those events, coached him in a road car, put him in the GT4, coached him in the GT4. And Brendan's, you know, like I said, a great arm, and then took him into GT3 with McLaren. And, you know, Ollie's done a, you know, we all know he's a good driver. He's done, does a great job of his silver. And that's been, you know, so he's genuinely just earned that opportunity for himself of working still within a motorsport related job, but not actually physically racing in series. So he'd had, I think, probably 2 years out before that. So it was, enjoyed playing with him.
Yeah, he was a proper driver. He did some stuff with AAI, the team I raced out in China with for BMW as well. But he was the guy who was winning ICA championships and whatever when I started back in 2005.
Well, yeah, that's what I said to him. You know, I never forget, a bit sad this, but when I started, you know, you get the karting magazine, like...
Exactly the same.
Look at all the cool boys. And I'll never forget, he was on the front page.
I've got the magazine.
They're all just won like the European champs or something. And I was like... Yeah. That guy's cool.
Checkered flag helmet on the side.
Yeah.
Into a corner, right-hander.
He had those Alpine style gloves with a little... Do you remember the knuckle duster thing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it looks so cool, man.
And the suit with a shoulder pad on. I was like...
Yeah. I had that suit.
Did you? Well, full factory spec.
I had the gloves, but I didn't have a suit. I never quite made it. It wasn't that cool.
Oh, wicked. All right, well, that's brilliant, Ben. Thank you very much for coming on. We can wrap it up there. I think we've covered... Yeah, all things from Asia to...
I've enjoyed it. I want to keep chatting.
You want to keep chatting? We can keep carry on, mate, if you want. But we need to go karting as well, don't we? Because
you
just need to actually go. Yeah,
Jake's already been and done this, and he left a bit sad. So
I was never that good in the kart. Let's just
get
that.
The excuses you had on that day, Jake? There was a few.
It was about minus 10. Pedals, no, it was about it was minus 10. I'd never driven... It was Rotax, weren't it?
Track knowledge.
Yeah, it was track knowledge. It was actually, to be fair. I've driven there about five times in my life. Ben's driven about five times in the past month.
Five sessions. Okay,
Nah, I'm ready now.
Yeah, we should actually go because we were talking about myself and Jake buying a car. Actually, we've talked about it for years. I've just haven't done it. Mates for a while.
Take off your own 200 quid.
Yeah. 200. Come on.
Oh, this could be dangerous, couldn't it? this could be dangerous.
That. We need to do that. So, anyway, nice one. Thanks for coming on. Thanks also to our guests and listeners. Make sure to follow Ben on all the social media channels, of course. We'll leave them down in the links below. And like and subscribe and follow the HYM podcast as well. Again, thanks, Ben, for coming on. Really appreciate it, mate. We'll have to get a vlog going when we get those up and running. And
cheers, Ben.
Get out on the old go karting track.
Your nice one, mate. Blast.
Nice one. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Bye bye.